Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, March 19th, 2009. We'll start with agenda item number one, which is to review the agenda for next Monday's City Council meeting. Oh, we'd like to excuse council members Summers, Fenter, and Higgins, who are all out of town. But we do have a quorum, so we can meet. Okay, page number two. Page number three. Page four. Page five. Page six. And page seven. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
In regard to item 7B, I'm wondering if there's any interest in putting this on consent agenda for denial. And the reason, at least my position on this, is that I don't believe this use permit is compatible with the surrounding neighborhood businesses, and I believe it will have a detrimental effect on those uses that are nearby. Thank you, Mayor.
Any other comments or questions? Councilmember, I'd like to leave it off consent agenda. I think this is an issue, since it has been talked about, that we at least need to talk about in the meeting, if that's okay with you. I think I sense where we're headed, but I'd at least like to have a chance to talk about it. Okay? So we'll leave that off of consent agenda. Anything else? Okay. Item number two, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the streets program, budget issues.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Dan Clevenger, Transportation Department Director. With me are my trusty deputies, Lenny Hume and Alan Sanderson. I've got quite a few slides today. I'll try to go at a brisk pace, but probably don't have to tell you. Feel free to stop me if you have questions. We have two programs in the Transportation Department. The first one is the Streets Program. Second is the Transit Program. Today we're going to talk about the Streets Program budget and our capital projects. And we've been invited Monday to speak to you about transit. First, I'll run through the responsibilities of each of our five services, and then within each service, I'll break down the individual budgets and identify some of the key expenditures. I'll go over our funding sources, and then I'll review our capital budget. This is just kind of a mini org chart showing you our four responsibility centers and the multiple activities within each one. If you looked at that grayed out portion to the right, that's the transit program. Again, that'll be discussed at a later date. This is how the streets program is broken up by ABB, or activity-based budget. We have five services in the streets program: street maintenance, traffic operations, environmental quality, traffic engineering, and our administration. The streets program provides funding to plan, maintain, and operate the city's growing transportation network. The proposed operations budget for fiscal year 09-10 is about $57 million. The first service I'll go over is the street maintenance program or service.
Excuse me.
Yes,
sir. On that budget, how much of that on the streets program is from just general fund, and how much is from the dedicated tax, or is any of that, or is that a separate item?
It comes later, but the $57 million is comprised of sales tax and HERF.
Okay.
No, I forgot HERF.
Yeah.
No general fund.
There's a tiny little bit of general fund.
Okay. This is primarily, though, the dedicated.
It's dedicated.
Portion of sales. That's the point I just wanted to make.
Correct.
So HERF and the dedicated portion of sales.
Correct.
Tax. Okay.
In street maintenance, They maintain asphalt, that's streets, alleys, and parking lots. We have a significant amount of landscaping in our medians and adjacent to our streets, and we also maintain a 2.25-mile shared-use path along the crosscut and consolidated canals. These are just some facts to show why street maintenance is one of our critical functions. We maintain well over 3,300 lane miles of asphalt. Our busiest intersections in Mesa each see approximately 80,000 vehicles per day, and there are 11 million miles traveled every day in Mesa. This slide describes the typical treatment cycle for our streets. This was kind of laid out for our arterial streets. With this type of treatment, we can get up to 30 years of life out of a street. We regularly assess the condition to recommend what treatments we're going to be doing on our streets. This is just a map to show you what we expect to cover in the next fiscal year. We're just coming off our biggest overlay and reconstruction program in Mesa's history, where we did $13.5 million worth of work, and about 135 lane miles were treated with different treatments. This map is showing our seal coat forecast, again, for next fiscal year. And it's just to give you an idea of the coverage around the city and the areas that are going to see some activity. And you have a copy of this. You have an 11x17 copy of this in front of you as well. That's the first of three maps. This one's the first of a series of slides where I'll break down the budget into individual services. Street maintenance is easily our largest service. It accounts for about 1/3 of our department staff. The street maintenance budget represents about 40% of our overall budget. And you can see contracted services and commodities account for most of the budget. Our street system is highly visible, and based on the feedback we get from citizens, pavement condition is very important to them. This is the same information just represented in a pie chart. If you look at contracted services, you'll see about 47% of the budget's allocated to that. It's about $10.6 million. We contract out about 75% of our work. If you look at commodities, that's $4.6 million. That accounts for about 20%. Our commodities include asphalt, concrete, landscaping materials, things like that. And our materials are bid out competitively. Next biggest category is personal services. That's city staff. That represents about 16% of the budget in this service. And I just want to cover briefly applied overhead. You'll see that on all the pie charts. And that's just the cost of administration spread out over the services. That includes the transportation department and other citywide administrative costs. The second service is traffic operations. That includes signing, striping, and street lights, three work groups. You see those numbers there. We maintain over 59,000 signs around the city. We are responsible for maintaining over 1,400 miles of striping, and we've got to date over 38,000 street lights we maintain. And obviously these numbers are growing. In traffic operations, it's about an $8.2 million allocation. It's about 14% of the streets program budget. Here's a pie chart again, just reflecting the same numbers from the previous slide. Some of our bigger categories are personal services. That's city staff. That's 28% or $2.3 million. If you see utilities, that's kind of a big one too, 28%, same as we spend on staff. That's electricity for streetlights. On the commodity side, we have about $1.2 million or 15%, and that includes aluminum signs, sign sheeting, and striping materials. Last category I'll highlight is contracted services, about 8%. That's for the installation and repair of street lights, installation of street name signs, street marking services, and things like that. Our third service is environmental quality. What we do in that work group is we treat shoulders for dust abatement. We use dust palliatives or asphalt millings to do that. We maintain 386 storm drains and over 9,000 catch basins. We're also responsible for street sweeping. That's for both the residential and arterials. You'll see we've got, we sweep about every 5 weeks on a residential, and that's with in-house staff. And we sweep weekly on arterial streets, and that's contracted out. The Environmental Quality Service represents about $3.6 million, or 6% of the streets program budget. Our largest expenditures in this area are personal services, contracted services, and equipment usage. Again, a pie chart to reflect that last slide. Personal services account for about 38%, or $1.4 million. Contracted services include arterial street sweeping, as I mentioned, and some storm drain maintenance, and that accounts for about $1.1 million. Our fourth service, traffic engineering, has six primary functions. They are traffic studies, the ITS, or Intelligent Transportation System, and traffic signals group. That group installs, maintains...
Councilmember Richens has...
Just a quick question. Wow. The alleys, are they... I'm not getting that feedback.
Are the alleys under environmental quality, the alley maintenance?
Where does that fall?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, we treat our alleys much like we do our streets. They're maintained. Maybe Lenny can speak to sweeping. I'm not sure if we have a sweeping schedule for alleys.
Well, most alleys are not paved. We only have a few of them that are dedicated or paved right now, but it is covered through the streets, street maintenance side.
Do we need to do any dust maintenance on that, or...
We do. It depends on the volume of cars. There's many things that are involved in that. You go through and calculate, if there's vehicles more than, I believe it's 120 cars per day, then we do other types of treatments, either a slurry seal or even a dust palliative on that. But other than that...
Wait.
Yeah. What's that?
How many cars drive? I didn't know there was a lot of cars.
Well, there is some alleys that are actually access points for some apartment complexes and other types of residential homes. There are some alleys that we use. You'll see them throughout this, they're spotted throughout the city.
So weed abatement is the responsibility of the homeowners that live by an alley, and the dust control is the responsibility of the city?
Yeah, we take care of the dust, the actual, say there's vegetation, debris, depends if it's a legal dump. Sometimes we have illegal dumping that happens in alleys, and we can't identify where it came from, but the maintenance of the alley is actually the property owner back of the, adjacent to the alley. But we take care of the dust side of it.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
And Mayor, Councilmember Richens, maybe Lenny or someone, we also have the program, are you aware of the program where we have the alley abandonment program to try to work with? Okay, so that's another way that we also try to encourage getting the alleyways maintained and encouraging the neighbors then to take responsibility for that, too. So, but you're aware of that program, too, so, okay.
Do we have any alleys where we still run normal city services? Like, are we picking up trash in any alleys, or we moved that all to the front street?
Mayor, I can probably answer for Carrie. We probably just have very few of them. I'm not sure.
Mayor and council, we're actually out of the alleys in solid waste collection, yeah.
So actually, we don't, the only reason why alleys, as far as the city exists anymore, primarily is because they're there, and secondly, because of utilities, power, mainly power and cable. I think we still have some older subdivisions where sewers may run down alleys, but not many. I don't think any water runs down alleys, do they?
I'm not quite sure about water.
I think there is...
Some water, and is it some of the real old, well, maybe in, well, I know downtown, for example, those are actually alleys, aren't they? But in residential areas, mainly it would be power and cable, with a few sewers on some really old communities. Jack?
Mayor, there are areas where there is water and such, but they're typically in the older area.
In the, really, the, okay. All right, thank you. Anything else? Okay.
Yeah, I think I left off with ITS, Traffic Signals Group. What those folks do is install, maintain, and operate our traffic signal system. Plan review function within traffic engineering provides consultation to the Development and Sustainability Department and city design projects. Got a traffic safety function, interagency coordination, that's, we work on transportation issues with ADOT, McDOT, and other valley cities. And then there's a temporary traffic control, that's oversight of barricading and construction activities, special events, and things like that. Traffic engineering represents about $8.3 million, or 14% of the streets program budget. The largest expenditures in this area are staff, city staff, and commodities. On our pie chart, you'll see personal services accounts for about 40% of the budget. That's $3.3 million. Commodities are about 20%. That includes signal equipment, cameras for traffic monitoring, video detection products, and things like that. On the capital side, showing about 8% or over $600,000. That's for new signals and modifications to signals, including left turn arrows. And then contracted services, about 8% also, over $600,000. That's signal installation, installing signal detector loops, pulling and splicing fiber optic cables, things like that. Yes, sir. Oh, you're going to make me do that again? We had a long discussion about that.
Well, I was going to say, you've done it before, and you're trying to remember what you said before.
When it's done by city staff and our contractor, it can range from probably 100, maybe 130,000, something on the order of that. We have seen, however, contracted traffic signals done by developers can cost $250,000, $300,000. But ours is on the order of 100 to 130, say.
Just on unrelated, well, it's related, but it's not really in it, just for interest. Are all our traffic signals, the new ones, are those LED, or all
yes,
of them
sir.
Are now LED?
Yes.
Are we have any program where we're working through and replacing, or is that just as it comes up and as a signal goes bad, we'll put in LED? Or is there an actual program where we're transitioning?
We started 6 or 7 years ago. We're just starting to get to the point where we need to now replace them. So we've had very good success, and it's a slide later, great energy savings, more than we would get with LED streetlights, which I'll talk about a little bit later. Saved us quite a bit of money, frankly, and energy.
Okay.
And Dan, isn't there some possibility of applying for some stimulus dollars to help accelerate some of that? Is that right, Carrie?
Yes.
So we may be looking at doing some of that.
Mayor, Councilor, if you recall, Scott Boucher was here last week talking about the energy conservation block grants, and that is an opportunity where we can apply for LED to do that replacement. That is an opportunity.
For traffic signals, for street lights, or for both, or all of the above?
None all of the above is my understanding, yeah. Yeah, energy efficiency, yeah.
Okay, good. Vice Mayor?
Along those same lines, we have the walk signals where we now have the countdown. Noticing that in several intersections, is that also going to the LED and reduce consumption?
Yes, Mayor and Vice Mayor. That those countdown timers have been real popular, and that is our standard now. So every new signal that gets built, and every upgrade that we need to do, if we need to replace some ped heads, as we call them, they will be the countdown timers.
Okay.
Ped heads.
Ped heads.
Pedestrian heads.
Pedestrian indications.
I know what that means. I'm just wondering what it. I love this lingo.
Lingo.
That
yeah,
I'll see if heads, I can so. Squeeze some more into my presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Lenny, for reminding us of that.
And, Mayor, this is what you talked about before. This is our allocation. We've got about $25 million in sales tax and $32 million in HERF. And again, these are
let's explain. Once again, we're in acronym
yep.
world here. Let's explain
right
what those differences are for people who may not understand.
HERF is the Highway User Revenue Fund. That's essentially the gas tax.
Right. And that flows through. That is not collected by the city.
Correct.
That is collected by the state and
correct.
Then allocated out to us.
Correct. And the sales tax, as we refer to it, that's the dedicated 0.3% local sales tax for Mesa.
That was approved by the voters.
Approved by the voters.
So those funds are used only for your program and not for anything.
Correct.
Else.
They need to be spent on transportation activities.
Okay. Now, in anticipation of HERF pass-through, what do you see coming up in the coming year as far as we have sort of the double whammy. People are driving less.
Mayor, I've got a slide on that a little bit later. And then
way too far ahead of you. Then.
We need to get in the forecast done by Chuck. He can come up and help a little bit. But I've got a slide, and I think it'll answer your question.
That's fine. I'll wait for your slide.
Okay. Here it is.
Oh. Boy, that was fast.
Did you two rehearse this? Did you guys rehearse this?
Mayor, I take direction well. If you look at this slide, I call this one, it's a very important slide. The top line, or blue, represents the forecast done in 2007 for HERF dollars. You can see it increasing. It ranges upward from about $40 million to $50 million per year. The green line is the bad news. That's the new forecast done in 2008, showing a generally flat line, averaging only about $32 million per year. So if you look at the top line over 7 years would have brought in $308 million over 7 years. The new forecast only brings in $226 million over 7 years. The cumulative loss, as you see on the table, is about $82 million. that's a big deal. And we think what has happened is people adjusted their driving habits with the high gas prices. As they fell in the unstable economy, they continued that habit of driving less, carpooling, hopefully taking some mass transit, but they didn't come back. And the gas tax is based on gallons purchased, not price. So if they're buying less gas, we have less revenue.
And this is strictly a product of driving less. And we haven't changed the gas tax in Arizona in 15 years, something like
it's
that.
It's been a long time, Mayor.
This is not, or as I understand it, is not a function of the change of the formula at the state level or any kind of sweeps or any of that kind of stuff, or is there a combination of the two?
Well, you'll see a slight dip in 10-11, Mayor. That represents what we're saying on the new census count, so that will change our share.
Okay, because HERF is allocated based on population. And it's not that our population's gone down as much as it is that population is a proportionate calculation, and we have other communities that have grown faster than we have, and therefore our proportionate share of the overall state population has gone down.
That is correct.
Ever so slightly, but it does affect us.
Yes.
Okay.
The next slide shows the forecast for the dedicated sales tax. And
which, by the way, seems a little strange because, you know, if those surrounding communities have more population, that means they're driving through our community to get somewhere else. And the wear and tear on our streets, and yet we're getting... Okay.
A good point.
Not that I'm going to change it or have any of the power to do that, but that just seems interesting. I guess we got it on the upside early on. We got the benefit of that.
Queen Creek has that complaint, too.
Yeah, I think they do.
Mayor, may I add something to that? I'm the fiscal analyst for transportation.
Oh, sure.
We also lost some revenue in HERF because we lost some of the monies to DPS. They did change the formula a little bit.
Okay.
And I know they diverted some of the HERF funds from ADOT to DPS to support them this year. So this is another reason why we're seeing another
dip. You mean the legislature kept some of the money that used to go down to cities for themselves?
Well,
or they reallocated it.
They reallocated it to DPS officers.
They reallocated a little bit of it.
Yeah.
We're all aghast.
Yeah.
And that's aghast as in A-G-A-S-T, not A-G-A-S-S-E-D. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, you know. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mayor, this slide we're on right now is the forecast for sales tax. And it really shows the importance of the dedicated transportation sales tax passed by Mesa voters in May 2006. Again, the top line, blue line, was the original forecast last year, or in 2007. The green line, or bottom line, is the 2008 forecast. The good news is, although this is the numbers are lagging a little bit, they have a real good upward trend, and they appear to converge anyway in a few years. So the difference here is about a cumulative loss over 7 years is about $6 million. But I'd have to say, without this dedicated sales tax, Streets program would be in serious financial trouble right now due to the HERF shortage.
Well, and I've heard Mr. Friedline, and I hate to take words out of your mouth, refer to our street maintenance program as almost an enterprise fund now because of the dedicated sources of revenue that we treat it as such, which means we really don't go into deficit spending in that particular activity. Is that an accurate way of describing it?
Absolutely correct, Mayor. And we run it as if it's its own business model.
And when I say deficit spending, let me be clear. Deficit spending meaning we would dip into the general fund. We would maintain programs even if the revenue from the dedicated sources were not there. That's not how we manage it. We manage it to the revenue.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I've left a hanging thought there, which means that if the revenue goes down, then the maintenance and other things that we perform are going to be deferred. The schedule and the nice map that you presented to us is going to be spread out, and that 30-year street program maintenance program is not going to be able to be maintained if the revenue is not there to maintain that, which will catch up to us sooner or later, because then we won't get 30 years out of streets. We might get 20 years out of streets or whatever.
That's
then
correct.
We've got to go and replace it. So we're really on at a difficult time as long with our revenue being down on the street maintenance, because maintaining the streets is what keeps us from having to spend additional monies on capital.
Correct.
Okay.
This slide just is another breakdown of the streets program budget. Our priorities for expenditures are in this order: debt service, then operations, and then capital. Within debt service, something I'd like council to know is our HERF bond debt payments are going up from this year at $8.8 million. They go up to $12.4 million next year, so it's a big increase. It's going to hold steady there for almost at that same level till about fiscal year 24-25, and so that's going to this is the bad news I got from Chuck. But
so you're going to blame Chuck for this, huh?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
And then the HERF bond debt retires actually in 26-27.
Let me ask you, is the increase in debt service due to the debt service schedule or due to an increase in debt?
Might need a little help with that one. I think it's still just paying for our street projects and ITS projects that we've previously bonded.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not issuing any new HERF bonds, so that is just the debt schedule.
The debt increase. Schedule. We just had a bump up. It's almost, I'm not going to use that analogy because that's a bad one. Thank you. Thank you for saving me. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
This question, Chuck, with regard to this debt service, is this debt, would this be subject to a secondary property tax, assuming the city would do this, or is this a different category from our other bond
this
obligations?
This is a different category. We've guaranteed the revenues from HERF to pay for this
pay
debt.
For this. Great. Thank you.
Right, revenue bond.
So this is a gas.
More like a utility.
Excise tax.
Great.
It's a gas tax. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know what HERF is, but a lot of people out there don't know what HERF is. So it's basically the gas tax is paying for these bonds. Okay.
This slide is just a recap of what we talked about so far, showing the dollar amounts for each of the services, including debt service and capital. This pie chart, just to break that out again, these are the numbers we've already talked about, or I've already talked about anyway. That concludes the first portion of the operations. I'll pause here if there's any questions on the operational budget before I get into capital.
What, you want to take a break or something?
No.
You're just pausing.
I'm ready to go.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. On to the capital side. We've got in the streets program bond projects identified in the package that was approved by Mesa voters November 2008. That's the general obligation bonds. We have new traffic signals and replacement of rusted streetlight poles in our capital improvement projects. Show you the dollar amounts. The bulk easily is the bond projects that were identified as $29.5 million of the $30.5 million in the capital projects. Start with the transportation GO bond projects. This is not new information for this council, but I'll just run through it quickly. We've got 8 regional transportation plan projects, or RTP. Those are street improvements. We have 4 others that I'll call other street improvements. They're not in the RTP, and they don't get regional funding. Then we have...
And Dan, I know we've gone over it before, but just so everyone understands, the RTP improvements, as you said, include a regional share, Prop 400 monies
right.
that come
Prop
in.
Prop 400 originally identified to fund up to 70% of the project.
Right.
So our bond package covered what was the remaining 30%, but as prices increased... our share may increase, but it's funding the portion not funded by the region.
Yeah. But we're also getting I mean, prices have increased maybe from 3 or 4 years ago, but in some cases because of the timing in the economy, we've actually done much better on our bids from estimates from.
That's true, Mayor. We're getting some very good bids, and that's why we're being aggressive in a lot of areas right now to take advantage of that.
Yeah, because I know some of the questions would be, wait, in this down economy, why would you continue on with some of these projects? Well. The reason being is that they're 70% funded by regional funds. We're getting a great deal on both commodities and the contracted prices, and so really, it's from a financial standpoint, it's the in many ways the best way of doing best time to do this because of the savings in the contracted price and the fact that regional funds are available, and this is sort of we take advantage of them, or they're not going to be there potentially for
That's
us.
That's right, Mayor.
So, okay.
Mayor, just can I just be careful when we say, I think that was the original intent, the 70%, but at this point it is the number. And so whatever the change in
yeah.
the pricing, so I hesitate using 70% anymore. I'd like
right.
to say whatever has been budgeted in Prop 400 for those programs.
But I think the thing to remember is that the majority of the cost,
that's
should,
fair.
The majority
that's
of the cost is funded through Prop 400. Therefore, when the city undertakes these regional transit transportation projects, we are paying less than 50%.
We are leveraging additional dollars by the
as a city. And the region, or everybody through Prop 400, is paying the majority of it. And therefore, it behooves us to leverage that out whenever we can. Because as we move on, that percentage, that share, goes lower and lower because the regional, let's say it's a $10 million project. Originally, they promised to pay $7 million of that. Well, that $10 million project that was budgeted 4 years ago is now a $13 million project. They're still only going to pay $7 million of that.
That's
so
correct.
So our proportionate share, as long as there's inflation in the costs, will continue to rise. Right now, for example, on Gilbert Road, what did we, almost $2 million that we saved just because of the timing and, you know, commodities are down, asphalt's down with the reduction in oil prices, concrete's down because they're not building as much in China, I guess, and everywhere else. So now's the time to take advantage of these savings, which both lock in a higher RTP percentage for us, participation percentage for us, and also lock us into lower contract prices. Okay. Is that accurate?
Yeah, yes, it is. And right. This is a 20-year program, so costs will go up. There's no doubt. So.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to go into that a little bit because I know I've had some questions of people saying, gee, you know, in this down economy, why would you be doing capital projects? And why would the city be spending money? And I think it's prudent that we explain that this is exactly the time to be doing this for a variety of factors. Okay, thanks.
The third bullet point is what's labeled street construction, intersection improvements, and street lights. That's formerly known as city share, I'll describe that just in a little bit. And then, again, our intelligent transportation system, or ITS projects. The RTP projects, or regional transportation projects, that came out of Prop 400 were selected for really these reasons. These are the eight projects we have in the bond package were selected for these reasons. The typical RTP project elements include additional through lanes, dual left turn lanes, right turn lanes where needed, bus bays where needed, ITS fiber and devices, and some utility improvements. This is a map I think you've all seen also. You've got a copy of this in front of you, 11 by 17. This just shows the location of those eight projects plus two others, the Broadway Road project between Sossaman and Hawes, and then the ASU Poly Ring Road down in Southeast Mesa. Here's a table showing the regional transportation projects that I described and some the dollars, estimated cost for each, the reimbursement we will get through the region, and then the net estimated cost. You'll see gross costs are about $23.5 million for these projects. We're getting reimbursed about $5 million, which leaves $18.5 million. And again, these numbers are just for what we're going to spend in FY09-10, fiscal year 09-10. There'll be additional costs. These projects are typically 3- and 4-year projects because you have to go through the design phase, right-of-way acquisition, and then on to construction. So first year, or this year, next year, 09-10, we expect to spend $18.5 million on these eight projects that were included in the bond package.
If you could explain, for example, why there would be, and maybe you did, and I was reading instead of listening, why there is no reimbursement, because that sort of seems to go against what we just talked about as far as the regional share of these things.
Mayor, you'll see on four projects, the first three, and then Dobson and University, we have a zero in reimbursement. They're reimbursed in out years. In fact, all of these are reimbursed 2020 and beyond. Okay. But there is a total of $11.6 million hanging out there for us to get once we've completed, and we can apply for reimbursement at each phase.
So even though the cost is shared by the region, we front the cost.
We have advanced these projects.
Yeah, we've advanced them, so we front the cost. So we have a net cost of the financing cost to build these now versus build these 2, 5, 10 years from now.
Correct. Which is offset by the cost of money.
Right.
Yeah, we believe, Mayor, that our cost of financing will be less than the
cost of construction. And especially at this time where, we're getting great deals on, or better deals. I don't know if anything's a great deal, but better deals on the actual cost of the construction.
Right. In fact, Mayor, if you look at the last one, Mesa Drive, looks like a really good deal. Looks like we're making money. But that reimbursement is because we had expenditures in the previous year that we can apply for to get reimbursement.
Right.
So our net for that one next fiscal year is expected to be about $50,000 on the good side, which is unusual.
Okay.
onto the, what I call the other street improvement projects, we show a three specific projects, ASU Poly Ring Road. That project's going to cost us probably $13 million. It will, in this day, because of the bidding climate, it'd probably be less, but originally anticipated to be $13 million. But next year, we will spend $2.6 million. I'll skip to the Broadway Road project. That one's almost a $14 million project, or was, and we're going to be committing or spending $510,000 on that one. And then Signal Butte is a fairly small project. That one's a collaboration between utilities, transportation, and fire. We're going to be building half street on Signal Butte and the north side of Elliott near the water treatment plant, fire station, and transportation is responsible for a portion of that as well. This is just design money.
Mayor, Council, just to recall, fire station 219, which is located on property we own, but Signal Butte needs to be improved right up to that point, so this is just the beginning of that.
It's just design. North of
Elliott. Yes.
Okay. And the other category I didn't account for yet was that Arturo Road construction. This was a discretionary line item, if you will, in the bond package. It was $13.68 million. The intent of that was to be used for road reconstruction between our intersection projects and some discretionary money for street improvements as needed throughout the city. And in this case, the $615,000 committed for next year goes for another different portion of Signal Butte between US 60 and Southern, and then asphalt replacement on Southern between Val Vista and Greenfield. That's Lenny can attest that that's a really poor pavement there, and so we need to reconstruct that one. So these projects, even though it shows $615,000, those two projects together are going to cost.
Between Val Vista and Greenfield?
On Southern, between Val Vista and Greenfield.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And those two projects that I just mentioned will actually cost about $1.2 million over 2 years, so this is the first half of it. This category, again, I say formerly city share because that's how a lot of folks know it. There's $2 million allocated this year, and $2 million allocated in 2009-10, and another $2 million allocated in 2010-11. And that's really just to help complete street improvements in conjunction with other development activity. It covers the regional needs beyond the developer's responsibility. And just like I said, it was $2 million was set aside for that. These vary widely. You know, it could be $1.5 million, could be $4 million. We never really know. Recently, it's been a little erratic, so it's the $2 million may cover our needs and may not, frankly. On to
Councilmember Richens has a question.
Do we maintain a fund balance then for that kind of thing, like that carries over from year to year?
Well, we allocate for the total bond program, there's allocated, and I forget what the total amount is. It's for 3 years?
4 or 6 million.
4 or 6 million. So that's our capacity for that period of time. So I don't know if I'd call it it's a balance that will make itself available. We try to allocate it out by year just to show how much is there, but we have at least a certain amount. I think it is like 6 or 8 million that we know is available for the next 3 to 4 years.
On to what's called the ITS Signal Management Network. This is shown as one project, but really it's a group of many projects. The bond package included funding for these projects. The ITS projects use technology to improve transportation system performance, and that's improving both safety and efficiency. Typical ITS project elements include installation of fiber optic cables, vehicle detection, upgraded traffic signal controllers, and traffic monitoring cameras. Many of the projects we're going to embark on convert our signalized intersections from our outdated and no longer supported Sonex traffic control system using 1980s technology to our newer system, ICON system, which has advanced technology and provides for improved communications using the fiber optics, versus our leased telephone lines we're continuing to pay for. And it also improves monitoring capabilities using closed circuit TV.
Vice Mayor?
Dan, what is our ratio now of the Sonics opposed to the ICONs? Where are we at?
Mayor Smith and Vice Mayor Jones, we have 395, about to be 396 signals We only have about 70 or so left on the Sonex system, the old system. And once these projects are completed, that will leave us with only maybe a half a dozen that we don't reach with this project. So we're making good progress.
So we've got a good percentage of them done then.
Yes. We do.
Okay.
Some of the benefits of the ITS projects include providing a coordinated system that improves progression and minimizes stops for our drivers. It results in fuel savings and reduced emissions. And then we also can have improved response to incidents and isolated congestion through video monitoring. Here's our ITS projects. There's eight, I believe. And again, it's a similar table to the other one. Our estimated costs only for 09-10 are about $6.7 million. We do get federal aid back. This is CMAQ money, congestion mitigation and air quality money. We'll get back from MAG on three of those projects. That's worth about $1.5 million. So our net next year to spend would be about $5.2 million. And we've got $10 million in the bond package for identified for ITS projects. So we'll spend about half of that in the first year.
And if I could add, throughout the life of all of these projects, as Dan said, they amount to about $10 million. The federal aid we'll get is about $3 million. So we'll end up with about 70% our cost, 30% the federal aid.
This map just represents where those ITS projects would take place. It kind of shows you the extent and size of some of the projects. And again, many of these are converting off our signals from the old system, which frankly is on borrowed time, to our ICON system. Just a few other CIP projects and I can wrap up. This is a fund really we have every year, and it's remained about this this amount for quite a while. $663,000, again, that's just for our new signals, and that'll pay for about four or five plus left turn arrows where needed. It's been adequate for the last few years. And we have a rusted streetlight pole program, really safety concerns on this one, and we've identified needs of about 83 poles we're aware of right now that have rusted. These are direct berry poles that rust down near where they're watered or are just in the ground in the moisture. And we need to get these replaced. From time to time, they have fallen over, and this is an important project for us. This is really my last slide. I just wanted to identify a few additional considerations. There's a couple of big things in here. The stimulus money, or the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. We're continuing to work with the city manager's office, identifying and compiling a list of worthy projects. Looks like we may have already secured about $10.8 million for street projects. You were made aware of that last week, I believe, by Scott Butler. This next bullet's important, too. I want to make the council aware of two street improvement project commitments we have. These go way back before my time as director. But this project, Baseline Sunnyvale to RWCD, is about a mile long. It's a Town of Gilbert project. We have an IGA with Gilbert from years ago, and this project has been delayed and delayed and delayed. It's underway now, and it's expected to be completed August of this year. We will get an invoice at some time, and our share is expected to be, I put conservatively here, $3.5 million. New information I got from engineering might be down to about $3 million, but we're going to have to identify a funding source for that. It's not in the capital program right now, so that's something to consider. The second project, Power and Pecos, is also a joint project. That one's with MCDOT and the Town of Gilbert also. Our share is generally 25% on the Power Road projects. Gilbert pays 25% and the county pays 50%. An IGA is not finalized yet, but has been drafted. Our share, conservatively, was to be about $1.4 million on that project. This one is bondable. Frankly, we think our cost might be as low as, again, because of the bidding climate, might be as low as $700,000 or $800,000 instead of the $1.4 million. But we still have what looks like close to $4 million of commitment on those two projects hanging out there. Other comments are just we've got contracted services that continue to be very, very competitive. However, with the stimulus money starting to flow, or it will start to flow, our contractors may be a little less hungry. Our prices may go up a little bit, just something to be aware of. Our price of asphalt and other petroleum-based products continue to be kind of volatile for us, so you know, we will do our best to contain costs there. And last is really a sustainability comment. We touched briefly on LED lighting. We've been using them for years in street and traffic signals, and it's working very well for us. We've experimented on Centennial Way north of First Street near the library and the former Sluggos with some LED lighting for street lights. Some success. We're not there yet. There's a lot of vendors coming out right now. There's a lot of folks making LED lights. We're continuing to evaluate, and I do see us moving into that sometime in the future. I think it'll be money well spent, so we're continuing to look for
opportunities. On a street light, just real quickly, and I don't know whether you know this off the top of your head, what is the power consumption differential between the LED and what do we use mainly, vapor?
No.
What do we use in regular street lights?
Mayor, we use high-pressure sodium street lights now. Or we also have some metal halide ones downtown.
Okay.
The ones on that Dan's talking about we were testing, that's some of the fallacy you're seeing in the literature you see flying through the internet and things like that. The actual consumption on the LED lights down there for street lights are greater than a high pressure sodium right now.
Really?
Yeah, because you have to have so many LEDs to get the light level comparable. And again, it's not comparable. It's not there yet. Some of our top manufacturers are saying they're probably 2 to 3 years away from actually perfecting that technology. Is that you have to put so many LEDs into a certain cluster, and you'll see the ones down there that there's so much tremendous amount of heat that it is lost through energy, or energy is lost through heat. They actually cook themselves out there. And there's some concerns in Arizona that if they have a day burner, that the actual light will burn itself out because it's so hot inside. So I would get the literature practically two or three of these through the internet a week on these fancy LED lights, and you look at some of those and you go, well, we've tested as many as we can. We're still going to continue to test them and see which ones we can, but the ones down there are actually taking more energy.
So LED seems to work well when you have a directed, like in a traffic signal, a flashlight, those kind of things. It works really well when you have a directed, focused light source, but when you have a street light where you have to diffuse it a little bit and have a little bit more, that doesn't seem to work well with LEDs, at least under the current technology.
That's correct. It's not there. What you're getting is it's a focused light is LED, where high pressure sodium or metal halide, it takes a light and throws it out. You have all kind of reflectors inside the lamp to help direct that light. Again, LED doesn't
reflect that.
Okay. The last item, Mayor, is just reminding you about our cold-in-place asphalt recycling project we did on North Elma School Road. It's about a quarter-mile project. We enjoyed about 50% savings over conventional paving methods.
How many months ago was that? That was 4, 5, 6?
I knew you were going to ask that question.
You knew
it?
It's
been about 6 months.
Just guess on an answer.
Yeah.
6 months.
We won't know any difference. Yeah.
It was before the temperatures got too cold. But, we're very excited about what we see out there.
It appears to be holding up pretty well.
It's holding up. I guess that's what I was getting to.
We'll look for more opportunities.
It's held up at least through the winter.
Right. What test sections are there?
What's that?
Because, I mean, you did one of the test sections on Alma School, and then Phoenix came in and tore up the roads, so nobody drives on it. But where else is it being tested?
Just there.
There. It's getting right. Phoenix came in for the water replacement or line replacement there in that area, and obviously there's the whole area is not getting driven on, but there's the sections that have been that still traffic goes on and off, which is actually more turning movements on the asphalt itself. So we've been very happy. We want to do the other half of that section of road, and as soon as they're wrapped up with that water line replacement.
So Mayor, that concludes the presentation. Are there any additional questions?
Questions? Thank you very much. Well done. Thanks. Appreciate it. Okay, the next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on capital improvement program for our police department.
Council.
Morning, Ms. Huning.
I may not sound like it, but I am Beth Huning from the engineering department this morning. And with me, I have our Trustee Police Department, Assistant Chief Mike Dvorak, and Bill Peters sitting to my far left. And we're going to be coming forward, actually beginning Monday, with a series of projects over the next few months and 2 years, actually, for the Police Department, our Capital Improvement Program. The majority of those projects were funded in the November 2008 bond election. The projects we're going to be visiting with you about today start with the project on the agenda for Monday, which is the evidence freezer. There will also be improvements to the firing range, security improvements for the Center Against Family Violence, public safety training facility improvements, and the largest of all the projects, the Dobson Police Station replacement. And the bottom four were in the bond election, and that's the money from the bond authorization. Starting with the evidence freezer, we had budgeted $600,000 for that. We now have the bids in, and it's on the agenda for $457,600. And would you guys like to visit a little bit about the need for the evidence freezers? Sure.
I just go through, we have three other freezers. This is our fourth freezer that we've added. The last one was added approximately 7 years ago. In this particular case, this is a larger freezer that's going to hopefully suit our needs for a minimum of about 5 to 7 years. Recent legislation that actually took effect in January of 2009 puts additional requirements on the police department to retain evidence for about 55 years on certain identified felony cases. And so we do have additional needs in that area. Right now we are at max capacity with our freezers, and this is our next stage to give us additional capabilities of
What do communities that don't have enough evidence or don't have the size of police department we do? Is there like a county or a state depository or a freezer somewhere? What do they do? Go down to Best Buy and get something?
Well, I'm not sure what every agency does. I mean, they have their own requirements of maintaining their own evidence. So they do have to adhere to that evidence requirement. So they have to find ways to accomplish that in terms of freezer space.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They have to have freezers.
All right. Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead. I know we're to the size that, it can be an integral part of our operations. I'm just wondering, this is another one of those state law changes that, great mandate, no money to do it.
Right. And it's significant, as you'll see. We talk about just keeping up with it over time and having to hold on to it now for, was it 55? 55 years for some of the evidence.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sure.
This kind of shows you where some of the existing freezers are on the current police campus. The new freezer will be going into the garage clear to the bottom of the site, and we have additional space there for the future for another 1,200 square foot. I would like to kind of point out, you can't go down to your local Best Buy for this kind of freezer. But
oh, really?
No. The freezer we're putting in will be 1,200 square feet with high-density movable storage shelving so that we can put more in the freezer. They have dual compressors, a lot of reliability.
Make sure you keep it on a dedicated circuit.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
And we do in this space have room for additional 1,200 square feet. So, next are the police range improvements. This is just a picture of the existing ranges and located on Center Street. And I would point out just quickly the existing classroom kind of in the middle to lower right edge of the picture. We have some needs out at the range.
Right, as you can see, the trailer that we currently use is an existing classroom. It's a 25-year-old portable trailer that is set off our main range. We are currently looking to build a classroom in about 3,000 to 4,000 square foot to replace this particular building. In the bond, we have $1,028,000 for this project, and hopefully we'll also include portable shade capabilities for our primary ranges as well. Primary project, though, is this classroom. As you can see, a rather old facility that we have used for quite some time.
And next up is the Center Against Family Violence security improvements. We are currently in design on the project. We have $384,000 in bond authorization. It's going to include fencing and building access safety and security measures. If you look at the aerial photo, we'll be completing some of the fencing around the site, installing lighting and cameras to ensure the safety of our clients at this facility.
And I know we went through this when we were reviewing the bond package, but there's actually been incidences there, as I remember, where we had disgruntled family members and other things who have actually come to that center, which makes this security especially needed.
That is correct, Mayor. This facility, a lot of victims of very serious crimes come, and we have had instances where people have walked through an unsecured parking lot, approached the facility, or contacted people that were there in the parking lot. So this will give us adequate ability to control that area in terms of security and provide a better environment for which they can function and get through a very difficult process.
Next up is the public safety training facility, and this is actually a joint project. Fire and police departments both are involved in this project. The existing facility is shown on the aerial photo, and we've kind of identified a site where we're looking at adding the improvements for the facility. We have $3.75 million in the bond authorization. The original was built in 1986, and we've been adding to that facility over time.
I'd like to certainly point out, as the police fire department works jointly at this facility, this has been a facility that we have used jointly for training since its inception, which I think has really helped our efficiency in operations and the use of our resources. This project here, again, tries to address the needs of both the police and fire in their basic training as well as their in-service training. We are looking, as we design this project, to include additional classroom space, locker room space, defensive tactics, and strength training. We currently have adapted to our current facility in order to accomplish some of these abilities in terms of defensive tactics, but with our needs and efficiency, we certainly are looking to enhance our ability to do these in the new facility. The next slide provides kind of a quick depiction of the areas that we've currently have modified to use at this stage. A little bit of the locker room capacity, as well as defensive tactics, which is actually a converted operational situational house that we have converted to a mat room in order to accomplish what we need, and also a storage area that was in our operational center we converted into this strength training area in order to satisfy at least some level of needs for our academies and in-service training.
And finally, we have the Dobson Police Station replacement. This is a aerial photo of the current facility, which is a combined police and fire station in Dobson area. We've outgrown the needs in that area, and there's some existing photos, and Chief can talk to you a little bit about the space and some of the challenges we have there.
The facility was originally a plan for about 65 to 70 personnel. We currently have approximately 146 personnel at the facility. As you can see, we have some pictures there of just some of the briefing and report writing and the criminal investigation area, where we have obviously a lot of the congestion and shared facilities allowing different shifts to come in and use existing space. But it is certainly a facility that we are at this stage have so many people in that it's a difficult place to function at this stage. This bond replacement for a new station, the current facility was built in 1980. We are looking to acquire a building here, about 20,000 to 30,000 square foot building, to replace the Dobson substation. I want to talk a little bit about the site acquisition and some of the things we're trying to accomplish in terms of criteria. We're certainly looking for a location in the Dobson area that gives us access to two roadways for in and out throughout the facility. Changing part of what our business is right now, our station does not allow any sort of public access just due to its initial design. The new station will have 24/7 community access to it with a staff front desk area so that the community can come in anytime they need anything. It also will be an area that we're looking for visibility to the community, and also looking to contribute to the revitalization of any area where this station will be placed at, as well as obviously adequate parking. Some of the functions that we are looking to include in this station is redundant dispatch capability. In case there is any failure at our main communications, we have the ability to dispatch locally from that substation or from the station. The front desk, as I mentioned, will be staffed 24/7, and we're certainly looking for interview rooms, ability to have a helipad capabilities on the roof, and we're going to also have bays that will allow us to do some of our forensic processing more efficiently at the station, and also have rooms to bring DUI suspects in order to do our DRE and our DUI investigations on site. Next slide gives you basically the site acquisition area. This is the Dobson, the service area where the Dobson station currently services. You can see the boundaries north of Broadway being its north boundary, south to the city limits, west to the city limits, and then east to Horn. And our site acquisition is certainly focused in this area, hopefully with addressing the criteria that I just mentioned.
And before we kind of go to the timeline, Mayor and Council, well, this area we look for different locations. We're both looking at areas where we can do take existing facilities that already may be in place and do rehab to those. We're also looking at possible locations where there may be retail centers that we may have. We would, in order for it to work, we'd actually have to remove the structures and rebuild. And then there are a few locations where there may be opportunities where you have vacant tracts of land that we could develop on. And so we're looking at all those different options. One of the things we probably want to look at doing is the possibility if we have a site where there is some significant, an existing facility but needs some rehab versus doing a new build, we may bring in and do an assessment of really the cost of each in comparison and timing to do that, because even with a rehab and existing structure, if it wasn't built for the type of use the police department, not that they aren't gentle to their buildings and using them, but there's a traffic activity. So we're looking at those, and we started out with what, about 14 different sites. I think we're we need to come back, and I know we need to talk to the council member, just kind of give a review on that. I think we're getting down to about 4 or 5 that we're looking at right now, and start talking about that. We'll need to we want to run some numbers, get some general estimates, and then maybe start having a community discussion too. Although it's interesting, a couple of sites are very close to each other, so there's not, it really isn't necessarily a choice between access and visibility. They're almost identical. It really becomes a cost issue of which makes more sense in the different methods. So,
yeah, and I know I'm sort of stating what I hope is the obvious, but always isn't, and that is that now is a great time to be doing this with the real estate market the way it is, and I would think that there's a lot of opportunities in each of those areas to be able to create something that's special for the community, but also do it at a cost that is much less or more efficient, I should say, than what we would normally consider, simply because that's the market, and let's do the best we can to take advantage of that market. I'd also like to warn against that can be a double-edged sword, because sometimes when you have a bonding capacity, we have the real temptation to spend up to the capacity. And I'm hoping that we don't fall into that trap where we spend up. In other words, we add things that wouldn't necessarily need to. This isn't the time to be looking for luxuries as much as it is a time to take advantage of where the market is. We have the capacity that's been approved by the voters, but take into account that they also expect us to be as prudent with that money, and if we can save it, let's do it. So, like I said, I hope I'm stating the obvious. Maybe I'm not. So, thank you.
And fortunately for my voice, we're down to the last slide, the other summary schedule. As I stated earlier, the evidence freezer will be going first, and we have the range improvements, the security improvements, and the training facility starting and under design right now and into construction in 2010, next year. Dobson replacement will be the longest of the projects, finishing out in the fall of 11. Right now we are in the property acquisition search and looking and applying it for different sites.
Thank you. I think before you go, one thing that's of note that we mentioned before is the 24/7 public access. I think people should realize that that's a change in approach to how we've done things in our substations, whatever you want to call it, in the past, where I know the one near my house hopefully I don't ever need to get there at some night when someone's following me, because it's like a fortress. There's virtually no public access, and I applaud the police department for taking an aggressive community policing approach that opens up the police stations and makes it much more of a public-friendly facility. So thank you for that change. I think it's a great change.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, item number four, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Vice Mayor.
Several of us were at National League of Cities in Washington, D.C. for several days, and as can be expected, the basic discussion by everybody and all the workshops and speakers that came to us had to do with getting money. That was pretty much the basic topic. How do you go about securing grants, and what's out there, what's available? And there was a lot of discussion on that. We did have the opportunity to visit with some of our representatives back there. As always, Harry Mitchell's been very good to us and have a very open ear, and he does a lot for us. We appreciate that. In our visit with going into Flake's office, met with the chief of staff, and also his staffer Chandler pointed out that historically Jeff has not been one to try and bring money back to the state, and we're aware of that. But he said, ironically, Jeff is working hard to build a coalition of donor states when it comes to transportation dollars, since Safety Lou is coming up, and Jeff is actually going out and talking to people he wouldn't normally talk to and say, why do you agree to this when you're giving money to other states? Let's build a coalition and get back more of our transportation dollars, because we're only getting 92% of our transportation dollars back that we as a state are paying, and so we need to get more of that back. And so Jeff is actually working on trying to build a coalition, to get that money back, which is a good thing. We also, Tuesday night, went out to Gaylord again to National Harbor, had a nice view of their facility out there again now that it's open. It's been very successful. And ironically, flying home on a plane last night, the young lady sitting next to me had just been attending a convention, and I found out she attended a convention at Gaylord. And I said, well, how'd you think? She said, oh, it was a great experience. And she's talking about future conventions that she's going to, and they happen to be at Gaylord Nashville and Gaylord Orlando in the next year. So there's a lot of business in there, and we're looking forward to bringing that to Mesa, obviously. So we did have a very good conference back there. And I will also mention, anybody who has gone to Washington and done some lobbying on the Hill and got around, know that you do a lot of walking, considerably walking. And Dana Hagen, she's still back there, but she was very proud to text me this morning to say that yesterday she walked 15,264 steps and 6.74 miles yesterday. So there's a little bit of walking going on.
And that was because she has an ankle bracelet that tracks it, right? She didn't count each one of those steps. I mean a pedometer is what I meant.
Well, I will tell you, you do get some strange looks when you're going through security going into the governor's office.
Oh, with those pedometers.
With those pedometers on your foot.
And just so everybody knows, it was some sort of challenge with the Scottsdale City Council. The city council members are wearing pedometers, electronic pedometers, so, or ankle bracelets, whatever you want to call them. Thank you, Vice Mayor. One other thing is yesterday, Councilmember Richards.
What? You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
On Saturday, the volunteer group that was working on the Broadway Recreation Center had their big volunteer day and a celebration of that project. It's absolutely incredible what they've done to the Broadway Recreation Center. There's a lot of city staff there in support and working on the project. And I just wanted to thank the contractors and all those involved in rehabbing that facility and making it a real 12-month facility. It's very exciting to see what they've done and to step up. And when their industry's taking it on the chin, I'm just very impressed by that. I just wanted to publicly thank them again.
Thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh?
Thank you, Mayor. Last week, I hosted in Mesa board meetings of the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies, and this is the entity that represents all the states in Washington, D.C., with respect to the National Endowment for the Arts and federal funding. So we had people from about 20 states who were here, and they came to Arizona and Mesa because of the Mesa Arts Center. And they were incredibly impressed with the operations of the center and the programs of the center, and remarked, this is what would make this a great place to live. And they are bound and determined that one of the board members said, we have to tell the story of Mesa to the country in terms of what you do. And so it was a very proud moment. The National Endowment for the Arts funds our Mesa Arts Center directly, as well as our affiliate groups and many others in Arizona. And the NASA itself worked with Congress on the stimulus package, and there are significant federal funds, as we heard last week, for the arts, and hopefully we'll be able to access those for benefit in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Yesterday, Councilmember Richens and I attended an annual breakfast with the governor that was sponsored by the East Valley Chambers of Commerce over at Mesa Community College, and this is an annual, like I said, an annual event. 200, 300 leaders from throughout the East Valley and others attended this with where the governor came over and spoke to us and then answered questions. I'm sorry? At Mesa Community College, yes. They were the host. So that's something we all attended. Vice Mayor, you have something you want to talk about?
I do have one other thing. Going to be hosting a food drive for the United Food Bank. We'll have collection boxes down in the City Plaza starting on March 19th and go through April 9th, which we will culminate at a pancake breakfast at Station 1 on the 11th. There's a considerable need for items for the food bank, and thought this would be a very good effort to try and help. We do what we can, so anybody who is interested can bring items down to the City Plaza and donate them in the box in the lobby there. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, next Monday, for those of you who are on the Public Safety Committee meeting, Public Safety Committee, there will be a meeting at 3:30. And then what we also, as I think we mentioned previously this morning, we would also like to do a briefing on the transit services budget. And we'll do that probably starting about 4:45. Before the council meeting. I think that Councilmember Kavanaugh should give enough time for the committee to get their business done. And then we'll bring that presentation as we continue to bring these presentations out related to the budget. I think in the following weeks, we'll have the Thursday after that, March 26th, our study session. We will be having a briefing on an updated forecast, and we'll be also moving through the next at the end of this month and the first part of next month with our utility departments and bringing those budgets forward also. So just again, a reminder about that. March 26th, there is an Audit Finance Committee meeting following the study session, and Councilmember Kavanaugh does have a pancake breakfast set for March 28th at Station 204, which is on 1426 South Extension. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
All right. Request? Motion to adjourn? Moved by Councilmember Kavanaugh, second by the Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.